Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. Two 420-foot vertical speedways, three launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Measure that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 G's in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch strata coaster. Get your tickets at cedarpoint.com.
Welcome to Stuff from the Science Lab from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey guys, and welcome to the podcast. This is Allison Lattermilk, the science editor at HowStuffWorks.com.
And this is Robert Lamb, science writer at HowStuffWorks.com.
And since you guys are listening to us, you often can't tell what shenanigans we're up to here at the HowStuffWorks headquarters in Atlanta. Yeah. But one of the shenanigans we have going on is a guerrilla gardening escapade. You can talk a little bit more about this than I can.
Yeah, a few of our coworkers, Mark, Candace, and Marie, set out to occupy our empty planters out on the patio. We have five of these things, like big concrete monstrosities. And for like over a year, all they've had in them have been dirt and like a few weeds. And people have been I was actually like occasionally composting an apple core out there. So we had a few like doomed apple trees and, you know, coming out. And occasionally someone threw an orange peel in or sadly a cigarette butt. But that was all.
I know who that was.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we probably both do. But anyway, nobody was doing anything with it. And there were some rumblings like, hey, you know, we should go out here and plant this. Because for a while you're like, oh, well, maybe, you know, somebody else is going to do it. Maybe like the building's going to take care of it, but they're not. So they set out, they brought in some soil, they brought in some seeds and planted like some, you know, it's like tomatoes and basil and all this. And lo and behold, it sprouted and you can go out there now and we have planters full of green things. However, if you walk out on the patio, you know, right now in the heat of the Georgia summer.
Oh yeah, it's a whopper.
It's going to be a whopper. The sun is going to blast your face off.
And the heat hits you almost like a physical force.
Yeah, it makes you slow and it makes you stupid, which we found out at the Discover Your Impact Day last week when we did the service project.
When we were digging in the dirt.
Yeah, it just makes you, like I was having a conversation with one of our coworkers about how we used to have offices on the 11th floor, but now we're on 15.
Uh-huh.
And how I wasn't sure if we had something on 16, but I was just saying 15 for everyone. So it was really confusing for him. And I, you know, it just saps your brain. But the thing is, it's like if you walk out on that patio after the sun has gone down, it's still hot because there's all that heat still emanating up off of the concrete.
Ah, Robert, that has a scientific name, doesn't it?
Yes, that is the heat island effect.
Yeah, and like you might imagine, the heat island effect is something that's largely confined to cities. And why? Because cities are, of course, mostly man-made structures. Cities are made with materials that often have low albedos, right? Or the ability of objects to reflect solar radiation. Mm-hmm. So the classic example is, think if you're wearing a white t-shirt, it's going to have high albedo, and a black t-shirt has low albedo. And cities are a lot like those black t-shirts, right?
Mm-hmm.
And when you think about it, I mean, what is a city? It's, you know, it's asphalt that absorbs all that heat. It's, you know, city buildings, it's mm-hmm. tenements, it's all this stuff.
It's enormous parking lots full of you know, just black asphalt.
And then, of course, you're suffering from a lack of vegetation, unless maybe you do have a lot of green roofs or guerrilla gardening going on in your particular city. And so that means cities don't benefit from the cooling effects of something called evapotranspiration. And evapotranspiration facilitates more cooling by using heat to evaporate water from the whatever you're growing the plants in and the plant surfaces. So this is kind of a handy process that we like a lot, evapotranspiration.
Right.
Not happening so much in the cities.
Right. But yeah, back to the patio. The patio is not a green roof. Today we're talking about green roofs.
Yes, indeed. Yeah.
The patio is just, you know, it's good. It's a great thing we're doing out there. You know, it's making things a little prettier. You know, air quality is maybe a little better, but
maybe with some fresh tomatoes with lunch.
Yeah, but no, a green roof is something a little different.
Right. So what is a green roof? I mean, on a basic level, it's really just a layer of vegetation on a home, on a commercial building.
Mm-hmm.
Any structure with a roof, basically, unless the roof is so pitched that having a green roof would be impossible.
Yeah. And I know maybe if you had like a thatch roof, you could like grow things in it.
No? I suppose so. And we could be talking about anything from just putting ground cover up on top of the roof to building a huge park. And I think when most of us think of things like green roofs, we think of, you know, this lush setting. We think of, you know, lots of plants. We think of little walkways. We think of a bench maybe to sit down and eat your tuna fish sandwich.
What's the one in Chicago that looks amazing?
Chicago City Hall.
Yeah. Like you see pictures of that and it's like an Eden up there. It's like the hanging, you know, gardens of Babylon. You can imagine.
In Chicago.
you can imagine. What was the mayor?
Daley. Mayor Daley?
No, the governor.
Blagojevich?
Yeah, you can just imagine him up there, like, being fed grapes as he, like, you know, reclines on a sofa or something, you know?
That's exactly what I think of. Right, so...
And that can be a green roof, but not necessarily.
Right, so that kind of roof that we're talking about, this lush setting, is going to be an intensive green roof, and there are really two main types. So intensive is one, and it's going to be park-like, like we were getting at, and it's also going to be a heavier load to bear on the underlying structure. I mean, after all, you're going to have people tromping around up there, and it's going to be more costly.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, you'll need an irrigation system for all those plants, those lovely plants you'll have. But say you still want to do a green roof, but maybe you're not interested in something so extraordinary. So
yeah, so in that case, you go with what they call an extensive green roof.
Right. Less maintenance. It's less lush. And you're going to have substrate between less than an inch and 6 inches. And all they mean here is think about the level that you're going to go down to plant, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's what we're talking about with a substrate. Think of your vegetative layer and then all the way down to the actual roof layer. So if you think of that distance with an extensive green roof, that distance is going to be about 6 inches. Whereas if you have an intensive green roof, the vegetation can go down to about 4 feet, I've seen.
Yeah, I actually got to see an extensive green roof last week at the Woodruff Arts Center here in Atlanta.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
And you blogged about it, too. There are pictures of it on
mm-hmm.
our site.
Yeah, for part of our Energy 365 deal. Yeah, they let me go up there and take a look at the rooftop. And it's you walk up there, and mm-hmm. it basically looks like someone just took a bunch of planters with, like, you know, some gravel and some little sedums, you know, these semi-succulent little, you know, desert plants.
I'm a big fan of the sedum, by the way. I don't know if you've planted any of those with your wife, but...
Yeah, we have a little succulent garden, I think. We have sedums in there.
Right. Yeah. Well, and that's key to what you plant on your roof because, of course, they're going to be bearing the brunt of this intense sun, especially in the summertime.
Mm-hmm. Might not be getting a lot of rain, like in Atlanta. You know, we're kind of prone to droughts recently.
Right. So you're going to want to make sure plants are heat and drought tolerant.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're also going to want to supplement their water use with an irrigation system,
right,
depending upon what you have going on up there.
Yeah, like, for instance, the Woodruff, they have the...
Yeah, what do they have at Woodruff?
Well, it's basically you walk up there, and it's like a grid of planters, like the whole rooftop, flat roof, grid of planters. And then it's two different rooftops where they have this system set up. And I believe they had somebody at SCAD actually design, like, there's like, if you really look at it, there's like a swirl kind of pattern because they use different varieties of sedum.
Mm-hmm.
But this is basically for if you're, you know, if you're a bird or you live in one of the taller buildings around it, you know, or if you're one of the, you know, tour groups or, you know, or podcasters who gets to come up on the roof, you know, you can appreciate it. But yeah, it's just a grid work of these planters. And then they have some irrigation stuff up there for, mm-hmm. you know, just in case. And, you know, if it's, you know, becomes a drought situation. And actually that, and then the water for that comes from, you know, their rainwater, you know, drainage system. So yeah, it was actually really cool, but also really hot. So you can definitely see why there are desert plants growing up there because you're really blasted.
So what have they noticed, if anything, benefits from their green roof?
Well, I mean, it pretty much lines up along the accepted benefits. I mean, it's, you know, it's part of an overall effort that they're doing there to tweak their energy usage,
mm-hmm.
which involves, they have some smart grid technology going on where they can track their energy usage in real time. The big thing they did is uh-huh. that they just like threw, they had a big energy audit a few years back and they just threw themselves at revamping their heating and air conditioning, in terms of the hardware, but also in terms of like how they use it. Like they figured out how, you know, like, oh, well, you know, we probably shouldn't, you know, air condition everything on a weekend, you know, so it's like, what can we not air condition, you know, and then, you know, how much are we using this particular space, et cetera. So it's, you know, smart management, smart tech, upgraded materials, you know, tweaking, everything. So they've saved, you know, bunches of money. It's really cool.
Yeah. So you might be wondering how much a green roof could cost you. So I pulled a couple of numbers when we were researching this podcast and I came up with $10 to $25 per square foot, according to the EPA. And of course, you're going to have some annual maintenance costs thrown in there. And those are going to range from 75 cents to $1.50.
Because again, the idea is that you're not going to need to go up there a lot and manage this stuff. It's hardy growth. That's the idea.
Right, right. Of course, some of your plants are going to die. Stuff mm-hmm. is going to go wrong. You will have to do some stuff. And that's where the maintenance costs come in. But yeah, hopefully it's running smoothly or running greenly, as the case may be.
Yeah.
And just for comparison, do you have any idea what the cost of a regular roof is? I wanted to see.
Oh, thank goodness. I don't have any personal experience with that yet.
No. Yeah, I don't really either until this afternoon. So there's of course a little handy roofing calculator online.
Mm-hmm.
And I ran the numbers. And so it's about $4,200 for a roof that's 36 feet by 24 feet, right? Made from mm-hmm. your basic asphalt okay. shingles, you know, the black kind of sparkly shingles you see on a lot of houses. So that's going to be roughly $5 per square foot compared to the $10 to $25 to even I saw $40 per square foot for a green roof.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's costly, but you can argue that the payment is going to come in the long term. It's just, are you patient enough for that
mm-hmm.
return on investment?
Okay. Yeah, they said at the Woodruff, like the main expense in setting it up was just using a train, not a train, but using a crane to move everything up there. That the, you know, the actual materials were minuscule.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
And you know, if you don't have the funds for a green roof, one of the things that we came across was a white roof. Have you guys heard of this?
Yeah. Paint it white. It's like the opposite of the Stone song.
Yeah. It reminds me of that podcast we did on fighting asteroids.
Yeah. Where you just, if you want to deflect an asteroid, you just paint it white so that, the solar radiation just gradually pushes it off course.
Right, right, right. So the idea behind a white roof is that, of course, you paint it white and you reflect more sunlight and it can cut your energy demand during hot months. And it's kind of like rubbery almost, is what I read. So you have kind of this rubbery white stuff on your roof. Now, that, I don't know if it would fly in this historic district that we're trying to build a house in.
Yeah, your historic districts, I guess you're going to want to go for at least houses that at least look like they're poorly designed, right?
No.
You know what I'm saying? It's like they're not going to be cool with, like, someone comes in, it's like, hey, I need a, you know, I'm using this geometric design, you know, my house is going to be made out of mud, you know, and it's more ecologically ideal for this number of reasons. They're not going to fly with that. They're going to be like that house looks stupid.
Well, so we had to go before the Historic District Committee, and one of the things that they suggested to us, or that was passed around before we could move on in the permitting process to get this house rolling, was they thought our flat roof was going to be so ugly. So they suggested, well, why don't you just put a green roof on it to mask the ugliness? But that's not in the budget. Yeah.
So you decided to go with the geodesic dome, right? That's the final.
And the straw bale garage right next door.
Excellent.
Yeah. We have a fine article on straw bale homes, I want to add, by Molly Edmonds. Oh, yeah, it was cool. One of the first articles I ever did edited.
Do we have one on geodesic domes?
We have one on a couple of other alternative home styles.
Cool.
Yeah, you should look it up when we're done podcasting.
We have so many. I can't even necessarily keep track of what all we have. I discover new How Stuff Works articles every week, I think.
Yeah, so how else are you going to benefit from a green roof if you decide to go this route?
Well, the roof's going to last longer.
Right.
Yeah, that's just it. And it's another layer of insulation as well.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's going to be able to cool things down. It's going to be able to insulate your house, and it's going to give you some shade, right? Mm-hmm. And I feel like we should quantify how much cooler are we talking. So there was one Florida study commissioned that found that the average maximum surface temperature of a green roof was 86 degrees Fahrenheit. Meanwhile, the nearby light-colored roof was 134 degrees Fahrenheit. Right. Seriously. Wow. 86 degrees versus 134 degrees.
That's significant.
Yeah, it is pretty significant. Of course, I don't know how big that study was, but still, that's a big difference.
Yeah, and also rooftop plants they can suck up the carbon. So
yeah, we like that.
Yeah, so that's good.
It's always nice to have another carbon storehouse around.
Yeah, and you get it right on top of you that way.
And then there's the whole stormwater runoff issue.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So if you have a green rooftop, a lot of that water that's coming down during a storm, it's going to hang with the plants. And, you mm-hmm. know, as a bonus, it might be filtered and or absorbed by the plants instead of swirling gutters and dumping directly into a wastewater treatment system.
Instead of going into the sewer, it's generating life on your roof.
So. Yeah. Yeah. That's pretty sweet.
Yeah. And let's see. Reducing energy use. We touched on that. You know, it's just you're more insulated. You're going to cut down on your heating and cooling cost.
And plus, as we touched on a little bit earlier, your neighbors might like it. I mean, it has some aesthetic value, right?
Yeah. It depends where you live. Like, what is it? The Lake Claire Land Trust here in Atlanta? They'd be cool with green roofs.
Is that the hippie?
That's the hippie place, yeah.
Off Candler?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, where they have like the gross stuff and they have drum circles and all that.
What's wrong with drum circles?
I like drum circles. I'm just saying that.
As long as they can play Jenga with their feet. Do you think they can play Jenga with their feet?
I bet they can do all kinds of things with their feet.
Yeah, and as you were saying, a green roof actually could last you longer than a conventional roof. And then, of course, you have a little nice sound insulation and a habitat for wildlife, which brings me to one story that I was reading about. So there's this Virginia man that was thinking about putting a green roof on his log cabin. And he wrote into the U.S. Green Building Council's Green Home Guide about, you know, the wisdom of such an effort.
Okay.
And the consultant who answered called that idea a real expensive squirrel feeder.
I was just thinking about that. Like, could I just put nuts all over my roof and have like a brown roof where it's just nothing but fat squirrels?
Right? Because essentially the cabin owner isn't going to have to worry about the urban heat island effect, you know, being a log cabin and all. I'm assuming the log cabin is some nice patch of Virginia woods, not mm-hmm. necessarily situated in the heart of Richmond. And he's not really going to have to worry about the stormwater overrunning the sewers. But yeah, the squirrels would definitely be down with that.
Well, then you need like roof snakes and stuff. It just becomes an arms race. Or squirrel traps. Or, you know, I know a lot about keeping squirrels out of attics, but I don't know about keeping them off of the roof. Cause you can keep them out of the attics by, like during the winter by, like putting up some hot peppers in there or,
Have you tried this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like I've known, like when we first moved into our house, there were hot peppers hanging up to keep squirrels out, but I didn't recognize the time, so I took them down. And then you can like buy like these spicy powder pellet things that are made for you just make it too spicy for the squirrels to stand it. And
your wife was talking about putting the strobe light.
Yes, that was, that's my father-in-law did that, I believe.
Right. Putting the strobe light in the attic and uh-huh. it got rid of the squirrels.
Yeah.
That's so great.
Cause they hate disco. No, they hate rave music. Sorry. They might hate disco too. I don't know. Anything that's shiny lights.
I think disco's coming back, Robert.
Is it?
It might be.
Good.
So what's the setup here of this green roof? You're probably wondering.
If I wanted a green roof tomorrow, could I get one?
Well, let's talk about it first. Let's run you through some of the layers we got going on here. So of course you have your plants, your vegetative mm-hmm. layer, you know, whether it's sedum, whether it's grass, or maybe even a tree or two. But again, you're going to have to think about the root system here. So you're not going to get big trees. And of course, you don't want the weight of a big tree on your roof anyway. That doesn't seem so smart. So these are going to be smaller plants. And then you have whatever the plants are growing in, your growing medium.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're going to have a barrier, and that's going to provide stuff, good stuff like drainage and aeration and water storage. And then comes your insulation, and then you have another protective layer. And then you have a roofing membrane. And lastly, and very important, you have your structural support to bear up the whole endeavor.
Yeah, like in the Woodruff's case, they said that the roof of the existing building was a pretty green design anyway. And that they said the roof was just way over engineered to begin with. So like weight wasn't even an issue.
Really? That's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so one of the interesting things was you can get this in a modular system. I was reading about a green grid system that consisted of a series of pre-planted modules, and they're made of recycled plastics and, well, the trays that hold the, mm-hmm. the plants, not the plants.
Right.
Plants aren't made out of recycled plastics.
That would really be a joke, you know.
And these modules can be easily placed on a roof or a different structure with the capacity for it.
Well, that's cool. Yeah. So business with a suitable roof, rooftop environment already, they can just start ordering these things up.
Right. And you're going to want to think about an irrigation system too, mm-hmm. depending on what kind of system you go with. Yeah. And you can also get a built-in-place system. But the trouble with that is that you may have to roll back vegetation if you have to troubleshoot something going wrong. God forbid, you know, your roof starts leaking or all of a sudden you sprout a root coming through one of your air vents in the ceiling. That would be bad. And you could wind up waiting a while for vegetation to grow in and be green. So the question here is, can you get one? Can I outfit my house or a business with one? Heck yeah. But it's going to be a little bit easier if you're building new, right?
Yeah, it ultimately comes down to the building design, too. If you have really steep, you know, highly pitched rooftop going on, you know, you might not be able to put planters up there. It just depends.
Yeah, it probably might slide right the heck off, right?
Yeah.
Although they can do, in fact, do green roofs on roofs with a slight pitch to them.
Oh, like they put shelving up or something?
Do a terracing system? I don't know. I'm not sure.
But cool. Okay, but the take home here is that even if you have like a more traditional, you know, Western style rooftop, you might be able to have.
I think they can work with a slight pitch. I'm not sure that they can work with, you know, the roof you picture. If you were to draw a house on a piece of paper and you did that triangle roof and the square house body, yeah, I'm not sure that roof is going to work with a green roof.
Unless you go with kudzu.
Yeah, you could go with kudzu. And the other thing is, if you're building new, you're going to have to deal with, you know, hopefully you have the funds to fund it, because like we said, this can be up to $40 a foot. And then, you know, getting it past your town or city officials. Maybe they haven't seen a green roof yet. So that could complicate the process and the time spent, you know, getting one. Existing structure. Yeah, you could do that. How much do you want it though? And do you have a flat roof? Obviously, although, you can do extensive roofs. Remember, extensive is the shallower, less complicated type of green roof. But you're going to want to consult a structural engineer who's going to be able to tell you whether your old roof was designed to handle the load of plants and you tramping across the top. And often the answer is no, it can't. So you'd have to go back and do some retrofitting. But don't lose hope, because Chicago City Hall, the famous one that we were talking about with the 20,000 herbaceous plants that covers, you know, 20,000 square feet of rooftop garden, that was a retrofitted green roof.
Yeah, and it looks amazing.
Yeah. And then I wonder if you could do like a mini green roof, maybe just do part.
Better than nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
So we'd love to hear from you guys if you have a green roof, or if you're thinking about implementing one.
Yeah, or if your company happens to have a green roof project going on, let us know about it. You know, we'd love to hear your stories. And hey, speaking of hearing your stories, do we have a little listener mail there?
We do. I wanted to share a couple that we received this week. First one is from Katie from Seattle, and she's a new listener. And Katie wrote to tell us some pretty cool stuff about bats. If you guys remember, we did a podcast about bats and white nose syndrome a little while back. And Katie writes, I'm not sure if you've heard this, but a couple years ago, scientists started noticing that thousands of bats were dead around wind turbines, but apparently not from impact with the blades. they discover that the spinning of the blades causes a drop in air pressure, which effectively causes their lungs to fill with fluid, expand, and kill them, similar to the effects that the bends have on divers. Many wind farms have since started turning off their turbines at night when the bats are, of course, most active, which has greatly helped the bat population. So that's pretty interesting, Katie. We did not, in fact, come across that when we were researching the white nose syndrome in bats. So
interesting.
Thanks for bringing that to our attention. We also heard from Matt, who apparently isn't sleeping and is instead reading Ender's Game constantly. He writes, a few days ago, I listened to Why Science Fiction Matters, and seeing as I'm an English major, that podcast was particularly enticing. I happened to be passing a bookstore just as I finished listening, so I stopped and I bought Ender's Game. I hope you guys have all read this, because it really is worthy of losing a little sleep.
It's a really good book. Just really, really good.
So Matt says, I write to thank you for recommending this book to your listeners. And I've read a heck of a lot of novels, and Ender's Game is at the top of my favorites list. Awesome, Matt.
Cool. Yeah, we threw out a number of suggestions there. So, a few different comments back. I think we're planning to revisit science fiction at some point in the future.
Oh, we definitely will. And maybe even with a chapter on sci-fi and film. What do you think about that?
Maybe. We'll see.
If you guys want to hear it, you know where to write us.
Yeah.
We're at sciencestuff@hustafricks.com. And hey, we are all over the social media space, too. So if you haven't joined up, we're on Facebook. You can find us at Stuff from the Science Lab.
Mm-hmm. And on Twitter, we are Lab Stuff. And you'll see us tweeting about different stuff. I'll tag my stuff RL. She'll tag her stuff AL. And you can just check out whatever we're talking about at the time.
Yeah, we are always thinking about science. So if you are, too, check it out. And thanks for listening, guys.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. Want more HowStuffWorks? Check out our blogs on the HowStuffWorks.com homepage.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. 2 420-foot vertical speedways, 3 launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Measure that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 G's in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch strata coaster. Get your tickets at cedarpoint.com.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.